just a rookie trooper, and he surely shook with pride. He checked off his equipment and made sure his pack was tied. He had to sit and listen to those awful engines roar.
You ain't gonna jump no more. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. He ain't gonna jump no more. Zoom, 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 zoom.
Is everybody happy? Cried the sergeant looking up.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome to another episode of American Warrior. You might notice that that intro song is a little bit different, and you'll find out why here in just a little bit. A little bit about how today's show came to be. You know, I'm a person of faith, and several experiences early in my life have led me to believe that there are some fortuitous random events, but not really any coincidences in life. And it's important to keep an eye on the horizon with that spirit in mind. More often, there are opportunities that you might miss if you believe that there are coincidences in life. Several months ago, I came across a video of a presentation made by a gentleman by the name of Travis Mills. Not sure how I found it, but I knew immediately that I was struck by his personality, by the joy and the ebullience this young man gave, and I said, dang it, we have got to get Travis Mills on American Warrior. Now, we very often receive compliments from listeners to American Warrior about the quality of guests that we have on the show. The ideas often come from you, referrals from our listeners or from other guests, but very often they're the product of perseverance and a determination to never give up. I'm speaking to you, Chuck Norris. I'm talking about you. We'll get you eventually. But sometimes guests are the result of those coincidences, and I just had to share this with you. I sent a note to Travis's contacts requesting an interview. Several days later, I received an email stating that Travis was crazy busy with presentation interviews and asking if I would accept a member of his foundation staff instead. Well, you know, I'm sure his foundation staff are great people, but no, I wanted Travis. Immediately after getting off the phone with his staff, I went into a meeting. The speaker at that meeting was a young lady by the name of Jessica Cox. Now, Jessica Cox is a young lady who was born without arms and yet has achieved black belt rank in karate and became the first licensed armless pilot. And I thought to myself, wow, she and Travis need to get together and chat. Too bad I couldn't get them on the show. Driving home from that meeting, I was listening to a radio interview with Ted Koppel. And Ted Koppel was talking about his new book, Lights Out, and I thought, dang, we need to get Ted Koppel on American Warrior. So I sent a note to Ted's publisher and soon received a reply. Ted is crazy busy with interviews and other presentations, and he can't make it. But you know what? We've got this other guy. His name is Travis Mills. He's the author of As Tough As They Come. So with that needlessly intriguing and winding tale of intrigue, I want to welcome to American Warrior after much, well, let's just say after a big coincidence, the pride of the Vassar Vulcans, Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. Travis, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. How's everything going today?
Things are wonderful here. Travis, how are they with you?
Really good. Snow's on the ground. I'm up in Maine. And I think it's going to be a great rest of the day.
Well, that's the kind of jubilance that I enjoy about you, sir. And honestly, we do a lot of interviews here in American Warrior, and I saw your video, and I was just enchanted. I love, and I encourage our listeners to stay tuned because I think they're going to love what they're going to hear from you here today. Let's start by introducing Travis to our listeners because it's very important. Some of your background and growing up really plays a big part in your story later on as we go forward. You were born in Saginaw, Michigan, just because that's the nearest hospital, right?
Yep. Yeah, nearest to Vassar, about 30, 40-minute drive.
And Vassar is a huge metropolis of what, couple hundred people?
2,500 probably.
Okay.
2,500.
Definitely a small town. And you say in your book, and I remind my listeners, the book is Tough As They Come. You say that you learned to lead with love and determination and courage and humor early on in your life there in Vassar. Tell us kind of what you meant by that.
Well, I mean, I just had to, really, really small football team, really small baseball and basketball. But at a young age, at sophomore year baseball season, I was one of the captains. And, just had to learn how to lead guys that were, maybe older than me. But I was putting in, the effort to be a captain. And I just come from a real great, town, humble beginnings where everybody knows everybody. You can't get away with much. I mean, you get away with a lot, but you can't get away with much at the same time. But just, you know, truly thankful for where I was born and raised, and you know, how I was able to go into the military full force and have a successful career in my eyes.
You know, Travis, I guess part of the reason I related to your story is I spent some time in a town that maybe is sort of similar, a town where the football and wrestling coach is actually assigned a day job as the vice principal just so he'll have something to do and they can justify having him around. I don't want to get into your encounter with the vice principal that you relate in your book because it's probably not quite appropriate for family radio. But you actually grew up on a farm, correct? Kind of a hobby farm. So you learned the importance of hard work early.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't huge and nothing like that, but we grew our own vegetables and you know, things like that. And then did field corn for, field corn just so we had stuff to feed animals or whoever wanted to buy it off us and things like that. But every weekend, I mean, if I wasn't in school, I mean, I was up about 6 o'clock in the morning getting ready to go outside and do something productive.
Now, one of the things that relates to your later on, your career later as a member of the 82nd Airborne, even though you apparently couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, they still gave you a rifle. Is that correct?
I mean,
or can you hit the broadside of a barn?
I smacked one with a tractor. I mean, I took it almost right, the broadside, right almost off the foundation. But yeah, they did give me an M4 and everything like that.
Well, and the reason I bring that up is because there were some lessons that you learned earlier in life in reading your book, Tough As They Come, that come back consistently throughout your story, and particularly in the end, after you were injured. Two of which that really stood out, and I want you to tell our, you know, you don't want to give away the whole book. We still want people to buy the book and read it, Travis. But two life lessons. One was when you first started taking karate, and one of your first matches was against a girl. And share with our listeners what happened in that match and the life lesson that your mother shared with you after the end of that match.
The whole time I was just dancing around trying not to get hit but not hit her because she was a girl. So I lost my first match in karate. And, you know, my mom said, why didn't you hit her? You didn't, you know, mom and dad were both like, what happened? And I said, well, it's a girl. He said, never hit a girl. And they said, well, it's okay, Travis. So I guess I was able to go in there and end up beating everybody to, you know, I was a six-year-old karate state champion of Michigan, which, hey, I'm proud of. But yeah, I mean, it was just that I always thought that you never hit girls, so I wasn't going to hit them. I don't hit them. I mean, ever since karate, I never hit a girl in my life.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, I want to make that very true. My mom was just like, go out and do what you got to do. I don't ever.
Now, but your mom did say, Travis, if you ever find yourself in a fight, just make sure you never lose.
Well, yeah, you have to win. I mean, that's just kind of how we were raised up. And I'm fortunate I was only in one fist fight my whole entire life. And it was in a volleyball match. We got heated. And I brought my arm back and hit myself right in the face and knocked myself clean out. I mean, I could make that up, but I didn't. I mean, that really did happen.
Now, coming back to the karate, though, there's one other lesson that really struck out with me. And you were in a fight. You were kicked right in the sternum. You kind of lost your breath. And you forfeited the match, and your dad had some advice for you after that. What was that advice?
Well, he said you never quit anything. You never give up. You know, he really laid into me for tapping out. And he said if you're not, you know, going to the hospital and you still are able to go on, you don't ever give up and quit. And you know, it kind of stuck with me since I was six until modern day.
Well, and part of the tagline, your book, Tough As They Come, is never give up, never quit. So that's why that really resonated with me. Travis, you got about a minute and a half before the first break. You went off to college, but it didn't quite feel right for you. You said it almost felt irresponsible going to college because you weren't sure what you wanted to do. So you decided to join the military. The Army was offering a bonus. You took it, paid off your debts, and next thing you know, you saw a video of guys jumping out of a plane. What was your first thoughts upon seeing that video?
Well, I went in the office thinking I was going to be an electrician or lineman, do something, you know, different, get a job out of it. And then they showed me airborne infantry, and I went, no way. How can I do that job? And they said, well, yeah, you can. And it comes with a nice bonus. So I was just like, all right, let's do it. And that's exactly how that went.
And next thing you know, you're in basic training. You didn't quit. You didn't tap out. You kept going.
Absolutely. I went to the recruiter's office beginning of March and the end of March. 2 weeks after I went in, I was in basic.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest is Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. He's the author of Tough As They Come. He's also featured in a documentary called Travis, A Soldier's Story. Stay tuned. We're going to have Travis here. If you want to chat with him directly, give us a call, 520-751-1041. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back after these short messages.
1041 KQTH, Tucson's News and Talk.
When I was young, I always wanted to be in the 82nd Airborne, my knees in the breeze. And now that I'm here, I'm gonna do it right. I'm gonna jump from an aircraft while in flight.
There you go, Travis. Do you recognize that?
Oh, you gotta love that. Absolutely. Every day up and down our dens, that would come out.
Hey, you know, we're a classy program here on American Warrior, Travis. So, you know, I heard, rumor has it, that when you guys would come back from mission before you're approaching the gate to go back into the forward operating base, that Travis Mills would run out front and start singing or chanting.
Well, I would. Whenever we got in a big firefight, the first time we got in a huge firefight, the very first day in country on our first patrol, you tell some of the younger privates that hadn't been there before were pretty shaken up, so I thought, how can I break the mood and use their attention? And I figured, you know what? Let's just go to the very front. And as they're coming through the gate, I'll have my LT and my platoon sergeant will count them out, and I'll just high five them and be singing. So I did that. I went ahead and started singing, and became kind of a regularly heard thing, actually. And nobody could tell me not to, even though if they were annoyed or anything like that, because I outranked everybody except for my first sergeant and my platoon sergeant. So.
Well, you'll notice we've completely switched up all the in and out music here in American Warrior to reflect your service to our nation. So I hope you enjoy that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm joined by Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. He's the author of a book, Tough As They Come, also featured in a documentary called Travis, A Soldier's Story. Now, Travis, I checked right now. Travis, A Soldier's Story has got a 100% ranking on Rotten Tomatoes. Star Wars is only at 93% and The Revenant is only at 81%. So that's something to be proud of.
Hey, I'll take it. I'm enjoying that.
I've never seen 100% of Rotten Tomatoes, Travis.
It is a GI Film Festival Award winner.
There you go. So folks First can find film. That on YouTube, Amazon, I'm guessing?
Yeah, you find that at travismills.org. Everything has it right there. And then you can get on iTunes, download it from there. But, the Tough As They Come, it was doing really well. And then I had 2 3-star reviews, and everybody said they'd recommend it. They just... the way it was written with the professional author and myself, and I don't know. But we're doing really well with the book because it's New York Times bestseller now, so we're really excited about the progress of how everything's going.
Well, it's a great story, and that's why I wanted to have you here on the show to talk about your experiences. Let's sort of get into the heart of that now. Before we talk about your, as you call it, kind of a bad day at the office, let's talk. It was interesting to me some of your experiences you shared on your deployments. In particular, you made an observation about the Taliban tactics where you say they would sort of test whenever a new unit came in, they would sort of test to see how tough they were and adjust accordingly. And I guess they found the 82nd pretty tough, huh?
Yeah, they called us a circle square tribe because of our patch.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of realized that when we were there, it was going to be mayhem for them, and they couldn't run the operations as well as against other people that would come over. On my second deployment, we were in Bala Mergab, and we fought so hard we had to call a ceasefire to find two bodies that fell into the river. And the Taliban came in and met with us, some of them, and they were like, you guys fight like ravenous dogs, and we don't know what to do, but we had to worry and focus about getting our soldiers back before we could continue the fight. So we had to have that meeting, but they were really impressed with it. I guess it wasn't the Taliban. It was someone talking for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, they weren't going to cross you, right?
Yeah, right, right. They knew when our patch got to town, it was game on.
Now, Travis, tell us about April 10th, 2012, near Kandahar, and what I think in your book you described as you had a really bad case of the Mondays.
Oh, absolutely. So we were supposed to have a day off that day, and we were sitting in our strong point, and our strong point was like a football field long, a football field wide maybe. It was just HESCO barriers. There was no, really no nothing. There was no shower, no flushing toilets, and we had to, you know, whatever. So we went out because we got a phone call from the village elders that there was going to be there was IEDs in the area, and we needed to go see if we could help them out and help ourselves out by finding them. So we went out to try to, you know, talk to the village elders and see what they knew and what they heard, and we went into the town, and my LT and the first and second squad went to the left, and my squad with third squad went to the right, and then we set up a support by fire. When we got to our place we were going to set in, we cleared the area, so I had one of the privates, Fessy, come up, and I said, okay, sweep this area, make sure it's, you know, good to go with the minesweeper. So he swept up and down the bank. You know, nothing popped or hissed or fizzed, you know, or I guess fizz, I should have said alarms. No alarms went off. He went down and back, so he searched it not once but twice. He looked at me and said, okay, it's all good, nothing, you know, sounded, no alarm sounded, Sergeant Mills. I said, okay. So then I took my backpack, and I was getting ready to take it off. I told one of my team leaders, I said, hey, come on up here. Where are you going to put the gun at? He told me where he wanted to put it. I said, it was a good spot. I okayed it. And I said, okay, bring Neff up, and let's put it down. Well, as I was telling him that, I took my bag off the rest of the way and set it on the ground. When the bag hit the ground, I hit one of 13 IEDs in a row. The blast put me from my right side. It hit me on my right side, so I went from my right side right down to my face, my left side. I rolled over on the ground, and I saw that my left eye started swelling shut, so I looked out my right eye, and I could see that my right arm was gone at the mid-bicep, disintegrated. They never found it. My right leg was gone at the knee joint. They never found that either. My left leg was there, but snapped completely through the bone, a couple of muscles and tendon holding it on, and they duct taped it to my thigh eventually. And then my left arm was still there. The wrist was hurt pretty good, and then my pinky and ring finger were gone and torn up. So I didn't know exactly what to do. I just decided I would, you know, call my LT. So I reached up my mic. I hit the trucker button, and I said, you know, six, this is four. I just hit a bomb. I need your medics out here with mine. What's that?
Travis, you're conscious through this entire episode, correct? I mean, it sounds
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm just amazed that you... It's just, I don't want to say it's hard to believe, because obviously I believe you, but to have the presence of mind to, with your remaining, what was left of your remaining arm and hand to get up to call in. And then you, from what I'm hearing from the other witnesses of the area, your first concern was not for yourself, but for your other soldiers.
It was. I saw guys go for a lot less than this with different injuries, so I didn't think I was going to make it anyway. And I just told medic, I said, save my guys, get away from me, doc, leave me alone, like, you're not going to fix this, don't worry about it, no hard feelings. And he just told me to do my job, and then I started yelling for the other guys, and they yelled back, they were okay. And they had some chunks missing, and they definitely were hurt, but they were okay. They were doing their own self-aid and buddy aid, and I looked at the medic, and I said, all right, do what you can, but no hard feelings. You know, I don't hold nothing against you. And I didn't want to go out like when you see in the movies of people that go out screaming and crying and yelling for their moms and things like that. I want these guys to just know, like, hey, it's been fun. I appreciate all your hard work. And just to tell everybody, I went out this way. I went out like a champion.
Now,
and,
go ahead, Travis.
No, and I wasn't suicidal at the time. I didn't want to die. I didn't wonder. But luckily, I didn't feel that much pain, if any. And my medics... You know, I'm a two sergeant. My medic first put the tourniquets on me, and the other medic came up, put more tourniquets on me, and they got IV access through my sternum, which was the most painful part of it that I can remember. Pulled me on the helicopter. On the helicopter, I actually ended up yelling at the flight medic to take care of my guys and give them water. One guy was yelling out pretty good, which he had every right to. And then they wrote a real nice letter that's in the book and made it to the operating table. And once I got to the operating table, I kept telling them, quit touching me, I'm fine, leave me alone. I kept trying to sit up, and they said, I don't know how you're still awake, Sergeant, but you need to go to sleep. So they knocked me out, and that was April 10th. They knocked me out, and I went to 14 hours of surgery. I think over 30 blood transfusions. They had people rushing to donate blood. But when they knocked me out, they undressed me, and when they took my pants off, my left leg came with it. So then and there I became a triple amputee. 2 days later, they cut my left arm off the rest of the way at the wrist because the skin was necrotizing or dying. So I became a quadruple amputee. And then on April 14th, they woke me up from the medical sedation they put me in, and I ended up in Montreal, Germany with my brother-in-law. And April 14th is my birthday. So on my 25th birthday, I woke up to find out that I no longer had arms and legs. But the first thing in my mouth was, my soldiers are my soldiers. And my brother-in-law told me, and the next thing I said, am I paralyzed? my brother-in-law, Josh, said, no, you're not. And I said, no, seriously, I can't feel my fingers and toes. You don't have to lie to me. I can take it. He said, you're not paralyzed, Travis, but you don't have them anymore. And then there was some self-pity and some anger and sadness, and I didn't talk to anybody, really. I didn't want to call my wife. I just felt like I let everybody down.
Well, and Travis, I think, so you are one of only five quadruple amputees that have survived, that have been wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan, correct?
Yep. Yes, as of right now, yes, sir.
Well, in the book you talk about, I think it's your brother-in-law, is it Josh, if I got that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, Josh.
When he was calling home and informing your family, he mentioned that, you know, when someone gets to that hospital, they've got something like amazing, like a 93% or 94% survival rate. Given your experiences, can you just talk a little bit about the advances in battlefield medicine and obviously that made a difference? Because I mean, as I understand it, they had you with the tourniquets on and it stopped the bleeding in a matter of seconds.
Sorry about that. They absolutely did, and it's actually a 99% survival rate. Not to correct you, but it's just it's that impressive. I feel like that needs to be something honored. 99% survival rate. You make the can of heart alive, you leave there alive. But I met a few people that are like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry you have to live like this. I didn't see this back in my day, the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I know. How fortunate am I that battlefield medicines came so far that guys in my situation that wouldn't have made it home now get to come home. And they were like, huh, I never thought of it that way. But before when they do the quick clot or the shear and they would try to burn the arteries together, now they do tourniquets and they just clamp off the blood. They just shut it right down. And it's truly amazing to know that I have no arms and legs and laying there on the ground and I didn't bleed out. And within a matter of, 20, 30 seconds or less, my platoon sergeant and my medic had tourniquets on all four limbs, just clamped right down, stopped the bleeding, kept the blood inside me, and I was so thankful for that.
Yeah, I tell you, Travis, what I find even more amazing is even given all that was going on, you're still barking out orders to the medics the guys on the helicopter and the surgeons.
Yeah, and the medic came running up, the other medic, and he was kind of in shock from seeing all the damage, and he'd never seen nothing that bad, and he was like, you're going to be fine, and kept repeating himself, and I always try to talk and tell me I'm okay, but he was, not freaking out in a bad way, but he was definitely just kept saying, you know what to do. And I said, Doc, just shut up and do your job. It's okay. I know. And, I mean, there's no reason for me to panic. If I would have panicked and would have got my heart rate up and would have pumped the blood, then I might have actually bled out. So I figured just stay calm. It's not in my hands anyway, and we'll see how this plays out.
Now, Travis, we got about 30 seconds for the break. Tell us about your wedding ring and why it was so important that they recovered that, because you had had a previous incident with your wedding band.
Yeah, well, on my first deployment, I ended up hitting on a Humvee, and my finger on the Humvee and bleeding, and had to take it off and looked down the front of a Humvee, and I lost it. I thought, oh, man, I better not lose another one. So this time, when this all happened, someone found my wedding ring and made sure that I got to take it home.
Excellent.
And my brother-in-law cleaned it off.
Excellent, folks. We're talking with Travis Mills, the author of Tough As They Come. Stick around. We'll be right back. Travis, hold with us. When I come back, we're going to talk about your amazing recovery. Stick around, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia.
Put on your boots and parachute. We're going up.
Well, welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here in American Warrior. We're joined by Staff Sergeant Travis Mills of the 82nd Airborne. Travis, that song's probably a little bit old for you, so I don't know if you get the reference there.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't get the reference. That song is awesome. That's one I sang to my guys when I called them on a birthday, actually. It's one of the songs. Anyway.
See, we learned from each other. Ladies and gentlemen, go ahead.
I'm pushing 29 this year. I'm up there.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. You're half my age, Travis. We're not going to bring that up. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm joined by Staff Sergeant Travis Mills, author of Tough As They Come, also featured in a documentary, Travis the Soldier Story. And please visit travismills.org. That's the foundation that Travis and his family have started after his experiences. Travis was wounded by an IED in Afghanistan, became one of only five quadruple amputees that have survived their injuries. Travis, before we took the break, we were talking about just the explosion and what happened shortly thereafter. You suddenly found yourself the member of an exclusive club that nobody wants to join. Describe in a book, and I'd encourage folks, buy this book and read it. It's not only an easy read, but it's also very insightful and very inspirational, and you feel like you're getting to know Travis personally. Travis, one of the struggles that you faced early on in the hospital was just the extreme amount of pain. All of us have been to the doctor, and they give you the little chart and say, okay, from 1 to 10, you know, how much is your pain? And then we have to say, well, is it a 7, 8? And you're like 10. Tell us about that, the pain, and why the nerve damage, and why that was infecting you so deeply.
Absolutely. So when I woke up in the hospital, I definitely was sore. But then your nerves try to reconnect with your other nerves that are in your feet and your hands. And that's where family member pain comes in, and where people say, I know it's not there, but it feels like it's there, and it's burning. So for 2 weeks, I mean, I just kept saying, I need more painkillers, I need more drugs to be pushed, because this is just, you know, my legs are on fire. I felt like a spike getting drilled through my heels, toenails getting ripped off, fingers getting smashed with hammers, and, I mean, just a whole array of pain, and I just couldn't stop the pain. And they actually ended up trying 3 different case studies on me, because they thought for sure, you know, I would just eventually overdose on pain medication because I was getting so tolerant to it.
Now your brother-in-law was there with you, correct? And he was kind of your battle buddy. I mean, you guys served very close together there in Afghanistan when you were deployed, and he was allowed to come with you, to travel with you when you were injured, correct?
Absolutely. You fill out a blue book before you deploy, and, you know, you had to pick someone that will escort your body home if something happens to you, and what's played at your funeral. It's pretty morbid, really, to go through and do. But, you know, they didn't think I was going to make it home. They actually gave me my Purple Heart while I was in surgery because they wanted to say they gave me while I was alive, which I appreciate. But he's the one that accepted it, because in my blue book, he was the one that was going to bring my body home to my wife, you know, his sister, because I met her on my first deployment back in 07. We got married very quickly, and, you know, he was upset, and now we're friends again. It took him a little bit, you know, a couple months to come back around to be my friend.
Well, now, Travis, we talked earlier, I was raised in a community about the same size as yours, probably very similar values. I don't know why Josh would be upset. I mean, you met his sister on the Internet, and then the first thing you did was take her over the border to a foreign country. I don't see a problem with that. Do you?
I mean, she was an adult. Yeah, she was an adult. She was 18. You know, I was 20, and
folks,
yeah, he was upset.
Read the book. I promise you, read the book. Now, coming back to that, you know, your motto, never give up, never quit, but in those periods when you're feeling that pain and they're doing some experimental treatment on you and they ask you, how bad is the pain? It's 10. For that first time, there's two words in your book. You say there's two words worse than any swear words I can think of that crossed your mind. What were those two words at that time?
I quit.
Okay. You actually told Josh that, I quit. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, I mean, you just go from 6'3", 250 to go, you know, to a guy that's now 140 pounds, that is no arms and legs. I mean, I could pick anything up. I could, you know, help with a lot of stuff. I was very prideful, and now I have to ask people to help me do things. I have to figure out, how am I going to be a husband and a father to this little six-month-old? How am I going to not be a burden on them in their life? You know, I want to be someone that's going to benefit the situation, is going to help out and have something to offer. And, you know, I just thought, how can I do that with the situation I'm in? So as much as I love my wife, I just thought that I'd be the one holding her back. And that, you know, made me really worried.
Now, when you at this point, Travis, you hadn't spoken with Kelsey, had you?
I did. I called her quick on the 14th.
Okay.
Just said, hi, I'm okay, I'm alive. But I didn't really have conversations with her. No, I was too embarrassed of the situation. So,
But at some point, you said, take all the money and leave me.
Yeah.
Right?
So I saw her the 17th of April. I saw her for the first time at Walter Reed. I arrived. And it wasn't the Kodak moment you'd think, because I had sutures in my leg rip open, and they had to take me to emergency surgery. And she was now in charge of my care. So she had to sign the paperwork saying it was okay for them to cut 2 more inches off my right leg. And she was, you know, really flustered, didn't know what to do, and I'm saying, sign the paper, sign the paper. And she had to go outside and sit down because there's a lot to take in. The next day I saw her on the 18th, and I said, look, you know, I appreciate you being here. I love you too much to drag you down with me. Why don't you take Chloe and go? You know, you have the house, the money, the cars. I'll financially support you and Chloe for the rest of your life, but don't think you have to stay with me because this isn't a life that I'd ever want for you. And she took offense to that. So that's not at all how this is going to work. And I just said, I can't do anything. And she said, we're going to get through this together. And I can't thank her enough for that because, you know, her being by my side, my little girl, who I thought would think I was the scary monster of a dad because I was, you know, tubes everywhere and picks out of my neck and 140 pounds, really frail and really drugged up. And she just laid on my chest, you know, thinking, oh, this is my dad trying to pinch my nose and playing games with me. I've never talked sternly to my mother. I'm definitely afraid of my mom. She's like 5'2", like 130 maybe at the most. But the only time I ever did, you know, talk sternly to her, I was sleeping, and I woke up and said, where's Chloe? When's she coming in? And they said, my mom said, oh, she already came in for the day. That's my little girl. And I said, you didn't wake me up? She said, well, the doctor said you need rest. I'll let you sleep. And I told her, I said, never, ever let me sleep through seeing Chloe ever again. Because, I mean, once I had them on my side, I knew my purpose in life was to get better, to take care of them. And I was fortunate because I did an experimental, you know, ketamine coma. I was the second person in the nation, which is just you get a bunch of ketamine that reset the brain tolerance, your nerve ending, so you think that your nerves stop where they actually are cut off at, instead of trying to keep finding your feet and your hands.
And this, you know, on the street they call this stuff Special K, and it's bad news.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some horrible, dangerous stuff.
Yeah, and then they did this chest study, and I don't want to jump ahead on you, but I woke up and hallucinated for 4 days, and then day 5 and 6, it got better and better, and then day 10, I think it was, a gentleman came in my room named Todd Nicely. He was the second quadruple amputee.
Okay.
Out of the 5.
Now, before we get to that, I want to just, my producer, Rhea. Rhea, what am I drinking here in this equipment-safe sippy cup here on American Warrior today?
Pineapple juice.
Pineapple juice. Travis Delicious. Mills' favorite drink ever.
I mean, somehow, I don't drink it ever, but when I was in the hospital, all I wanted was Oreos and pineapple juice and a double-decker pontoon boat.
None of that sounds unreasonable to me, Travis. Not at all.
I got, you know what, though? I got a regular tri-tune. I don't got the double-decker. But it's okay. And then the pineapple juice and Oreos, I don't know. People just started sending them. You know, someone brought me a case of pineapple juice, and I had tons of Oreos sent to me, and, you know, it was very nice, very thoughtful, everybody. I think it got on a couple of news stations somehow. Right. Kelsey was being interviewed, and she just said, all he wants is Oreos and pineapple juice. She goes, he doesn't even drink pineapple juice normally, and I didn't.
Well, I love it. I'm drinking it in your honor here today. One of my favorite parts of the book, you talked about Chloe, your daughter Chloe, was the first person you actually made eye contact with. In the hospital, and that's so special. Your family, Travis, was staying at the Fisher House. We're looking to build one here in Southern Arizona. Can you just maybe share your thoughts, if you're willing to, about how important the Fisher House was and how important it was to you to have your family and your friends there close to you while you were recovering?
Absolutely. I think that the Fisher House is one of the greatest organizations out there. They put my family up for free. They would let my friends, family, like, rotate in and out. My mom and dad had a place to stay because they pay their own mortgage on their house in Vassar. They can't come here and get an apartment, and they can't, you know, they have to do something. They have to be with me. My wife has to be here with me. We have a mortgage. And the Fisher House, thankfully, is a foundation that provides temporary housing for people that are going through situations like I had. And it's just communal living. You know, you get your own room, and then you have a big kitchen, and everybody has, you know, grown-up rules, which is nice. But, I mean, that's where I had my first meal. My first actual meal was in the Fisher House, and I used my hand for the first time eating. And it was just an amazing organization, and the things they're able to do with the money that they raise, and I try to help them out every chance I get. with their mission to raise money and build more Fisher houses throughout the nation.
Well, and thank you for that, because it's so important. And this will be the first one in Arizona, and we're very excited about having it here. Maybe we can get you out sometime to explore it. And you'd mentioned real quick, we've got about a minute before the next break, Todd Nicely, another amputee that visited your room, and he shared with you, look, it's going to take a while, but eventually you'll be able to do the stuff that I can do. And he reached in there and opened a soda for you. Was that, Travis, the point at which you said, you know what, I can do this? I'm gonna sort of change my attitude?
Well, it was the final missing piece I needed. My wife and my daughter were going to stay with me, and I wanted to get better. I needed to get better, but I didn't know what the future held. And then Todd Nicely walked in. That's my future. That's where I'm going in life. And he walked in the room, and he drove up, you know, and he lived in Missouri by himself with his, you know, in his own house. And I just thought, you know what, that's my future, and that's where I'm going to go. So I never looked back after that. I got an argument with the doctor the next day about working out, and after 4 hours of every half hour calling, he let me go do some of my workout, and I never looked back.
Ladies and gentlemen, his name is Travis Mills. He's the author of Tough As They Come. He's not a wounded warrior. He said he was wounded once in battle, but now he's recovered. He's a recalibrated warrior. There's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, joined by Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. We'll be right back. There's our last one, Travis. What do you think?
Oh, I love that one, except it said pick up your weapon. I mean, well, you say pick up, shoot, and follow me.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, we're just some poor immigrants here in Tucson.
I'm not upset. You guys are doing great. I said it wrong, and I felt like really silly because I said it wrong. So
no.
Trust
me, I'm used to being corrected. You've earned it. Now, while we're doing a quiz, I want you to listen to the next track we're going to play here for you and see if you recognize this. Rhea, what you got loaded there?
I met Travis at a Memorial Day weekend event in Washington, D.C., where the Lieutenant Dan Band was playing. I had heard about the extent of Travis's injuries and knew that the Gary Sinise Foundation had to help get him and his family into a home of their own. And under our RISE program, in collaboration with Building for America's Bravest, on October 15th, 2014, the home was completed and given to Travis and his family.
For everybody that was involved, because there's so many people to mention, everybody up on stage, people out there, thanks for bringing my wife and my daughter home.
Now, Travis, you're... not yet. You're a tough guy. We're not retreating yet. There we go. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
That's later on. You're a tough guy, but it sounded like you were cracking a little bit there.
Oh, the wind was in my face. So, yeah, no, come on. I mean, that's the one thing. We did a screening on my documentary in Coronado, California, and I met 6 of the 9 doctors that night that saved my life, and then one of the nurse's parents actually flew in from Washington State to go to the show, so they flew down to California. And I told them I was very upset with them, and they said, well, what do you mean? And they were worried because they saved my life, I'd be mad at them because, you know, what kind of life did I live? And I said, when you guys were in there doing your checks and everything, you found out I had no tear ducts, you put them in there, and I didn't need them because my daughter was born. I didn't cry at all. I made weird noises, and I just was like, wow, that was weird. They're just like, this guy's crazy. But, I was. And it's truly, you know, my daughter makes me do that kind of stuff. My wife, she stuck with my side. But, you know, I told her not to, even though she knew she was going to. I told her, don't worry about it. Like, it's not something that she has to, you know, deal with. But, so that's just, Gary Sinise is an amazing guy. I'm lucky to be an ambassador for his foundation and to know him personally and, you know, consider him a friend you know, text him every now and then, see what's going on, where he's at in the world. He's just, he's using his fame and his success in a really positive way, building houses. And he has 6 different programs that he does, and it's just amazing. Everything he does is amazing.
Well, and Travis, I wanted to play that because, and by the way, Gary sends his best when he found out we're having you on the show. He's the one that actually sent me those clips. The importance of that home, and I guess the next thing I want to chat about is just the importance of being independent. You refer to a point in your book where you were in your wheelchair and you decided, you told your wife, look, go home, I'm doing okay. You went out and you learned a special safety share about how you shouldn't text and drive. But the importance of independence and to be able to do simple things for yourself, like brush your teeth, like get up in the morning and fix breakfast for Chloe, or to take your family for a drive. And the extent to which the support that everybody's given you, whether it's, you know, a home from the Gary Sinise Foundation or just some of the other support folks have given you, how important is it for a recalibrated warrior like yourself to have that sense of independence again?
Well, that's a big part of it for me. For me, it was the mental part of the recovery was the worst. Physically, I could do it. Physically, I could put weights on my legs and pick them up and down. Physically, I could learn the muscle movements to walk. I could learn how to use my arm. Mentally, though, having to have people always help you was definitely trying on me. So the more independent I got, the better off my recovery did. So before you knew it, I was dressing myself, put my arm on, I was feeding myself. I mean, it started simple. At first, I went from not being able to feed myself and do other things, toiletry things. So I got my arm out. I decided I was never going to have anybody help me ever again with that stuff. So I feed myself and do that. And then now I have a house where this morning I woke up and I made myself egg whites with crumbled sausage, turkey sausage, in a pan, you know. And I made that breakfast for me, put a little salsa on it. My little girl didn't think that looked appetizing at all, so she just wanted fruit and yogurt, but we had that. And the house has truly been so great, but I have vehicles I can drive. I take my daughter to school every morning. I live a really normal life. As much as I look a little bit different, I take my daughter to school at 8, and at 8:15 I'm at the gym doing CrossFit. And then after that, I'm in meetings and conferences, and if I'm not on the road traveling, I travel quite a bit too, though.
I tell you, Travis, that's why I wanted you to share that, because for someone, I'll just speak for myself, I mean, we just don't think about it because we just do it every day. But, you know, when you're in rehab, the very first thing you had to learn was how to sit up again, you know, not to mention just, you know, brushing your teeth or taking a shower. And just the fact that you're doing that, I just find it incredibly inspirational. We actually have a caller here. Caller Rick wants to chat with you. Rick, welcome to American Warrior, and meet Travis Mills.
Yeah, hey, Travis. Appreciate your story, my friend. And I think your message can resonate with a whole different generation of younger people that don't understand it. That no matter what we go through, we can get through it. And I'm sure your book and your travels and your relationships carry that message. And I just want to say thank you. Number two, the Fisher House, we are done with our Fisher House here in Tucson. It is ready to go. And we're going to be housing families. And to be part of that process and giving back has been a great honor for me. And also, and being a disabled veteran, there's a certain relationship that comes, but pity is not one of them. And I just want to say thank you for your courage and your commitment to stand up and do what's right. Thank you, sir.
Oh, I appreciate that, sir. Thank you, and thank you for your service. I want everybody to know that the book, it's 100% the truth. I signed papers to make sure that I didn't lie about anything else. I'd get in a lot of trouble. But the very first author's note starts off with, you know, I thank everybody for their service. Thank you so much for everybody out there that served. I don't think I did any more. I don't think I, you know, fought any harder or did anything greater. I just raised my hand and served like everybody else. So if you served, thank you. And I don't feel like my problems are any more than anybody else's. I just had a rough day at the office. I feel like we all have things we're going through, and hopefully my story somehow can, you know, either inspire you or motivate you or just make you laugh and smile and be happy and sad all in one, because it just tells the story of my wife and I and my daughter. But I do appreciate all the support I do get, and I think it's just great that I have the platform to tell people I'm not a sob story, I'm not someone you have to pity, and this is me.
Now, Travis, I'm glad you brought that up. Something Rick mentioned also is a question I want to ask you. You disarm people with your humor. That's your weapon. For the rest of us, when we encounter a recalibrated warrior, how can we do it and be respectful and be honest with them? What are your suggestions for those of us out there who aren't as well equipped as you?
Well, I'll be honest. I like to use my joke. I usually use that disarm joke quite a bit. I was talking about trying to disarm to get it.
I have one situation. Yeah.
Nicely done. But really, I mean, I'm just as normal as anybody else, I feel like. I mean, obviously I look different, but my brain still works the same. So how would you address, somebody that you see on the street? I think the easiest way is just saying, hey, what's up, how's it going? Or hi, I'm, state your name, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I get asked that a lot, but I think the biggest thing is we don't, in the shoes I'm in, I don't want to be treated any different because of the situation. I'm luckily able to talk to people and have, after, 5-10 minutes, I've had people that have sat down next to me at the table and said, how'd you lose your arm? And I tell them, well, I was like, oh my gosh, it's so crazy. And then I show them my other arm and they're like, oh, I didn't realize that was fake. And then I stand up, they're like, oh my gosh, you lost all four limbs? And the quicker I can make people forget that I have no arms and legs, the better off the conversation really is, so they're not worried about what they say.
Well, Travis, I tell you, I really enjoyed reading your book. I encourage folks to buy it, Tough As They Come. Real quick, Travis Mills Foundation, travismills.org. You just bought a camp in Maine. What are your plans for that camp? What can we do to help?
Absolutely. We're under massive renovations right now. It's a $2.7 million project, but what we do is we bring out men and women in my situation, and we show them how to adaptively do kayaking, canoeing, boating, swimming, fishing. This place is all ADA, and we bring out the families, not just the people in my situation, but the families as well. And we show them you don't have to live life on the sidelines. We show them that you can get back out there and be an active member in society and your family, and, not to just sit inside and mope and sulk about it. And we're building a network. I don't run into a lot of people in my situation, but I am building a network for other people in my situation to know that they're not alone in their, situation, their struggle, and that they can always call and ask any question they want, and I'm there to help them. And truly, it's been a great success so far. We had 2 proof of concepts with 4 families and 6 families, and I'm just trying to honor those that served and, like me, had a rough day at work and maybe need some help finding out ways to be active in their families and to know that they're just like anybody else. They're just as normal, and they'll be able to bounce back and do things productively and actively in their family.
Well, Travis, I tell you what, it's been quite the honor for us to have you here on American Warrior. Thank you for your service, sir. Folks, don't forget to visit travismills.org. Get the book, Tough As They Come. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, all policy and procedures are to remain in place.